Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today. The Church under Communist Rule is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Hello, and thanks for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. My name is John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, and I'm your host for the Lutheran Inquisitor. Today, we're very pleased to welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor Dr. Tibor Fabbany. Dr. Fabbany is professor of English literature and hermeneutics at the Károly Gáspár University of the Reformed Church in Budapest, Hungary. Dr. Fabbany is also president of the Hungarian Luther Alliance. He was a Fulbright visiting scholar at the Theological Seminary of Princeton in 2004. He was also a Copenhagen scholar of research at Roanoke College in Roanoke, Virginia in 1993 and 2006. He is the author of the book, The Veil of God, which is a history and description of the Lutheran Church in Hungary under communist rule from the years 1948 to 1990. This book gives us a wonderful view of the veil of God and tries to grapple with the question, where is God in times of suffering, in times of persecution? Is God really with His church? Is God really among us? Is God really for us? So it is our pleasure to welcome Dr. Tibor Fabbany with us today. Dr. Fabbany, thanks for joining us on Lutheran Radio UK.
Thanks so much.
We're here to talk today about the rise of communism within Hungary and the church's response to it and how the church lived under that communist rule. But for many of our listeners, I suspect they don't even understand or know how communism came to be the dominant force in Hungary after World War II. Can you give us a brief historical background about that?
Sure. So we must go back to history and say that Hungary was an independent country for a long while, but unfortunately, with the end of the First World War, Hungary lost two-thirds of her territories, and several parts became part of Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, Romania, and even Austria. And there was a very short period in 1919 when Hungary became communist, you know, just right after the First World War, for about 3.5 months. And then from 1920 up to the end of the Second World War, Hungary was again independent, but it was a smaller country. And earlier, Hungary was a part of the Austro-Hungarian monarchy. With the collapse of the Hungarian monarchy, Hungary became smaller. And it meant that there was no monarch, there was no king. There was a regent called Horthy. And during this 25 years of history, Regent Horthy had to balance. And unfortunately, Hungary was a kind of neutral, tried to remain neutral, but it could not. So it allied itself with Germany. So it found itself on the side of the losers in the Second World War. But communism did not come until 1948. So for 2 years period after the Second World War, Hungary was a relatively democratic country. There were free elections, though by 1947-48, these elections were manipulated. Well, what happened that in 1948, the left-wing parties merged, the Social Democratic and the Hungarian Communist Party, and on August 20th, 1948, Hungary was declared to be a proletarian dictatorship.
Now, in your book, you discuss the reactions of the different churches within Hungary, and you say that the Roman Catholic and the Reformed and the Lutherans all took a sort of slightly different approach to communism. Can you explain what the Roman Catholics did and the Reformed did before we look at the Lutheran church?
Right. Well, the Catholics, because of their majority in the population, they said that, well, we have the right to resist, politically speaking. So there was a famous cardinal, Cardinal Mincenti, who became a symbol of the resistance to communism. But his attitude was different because he was not only a cardinal, but he considered himself also a politician. And his theology was rather a kind of political theology. It was motivated mainly by politics and not by theological reasons. So therefore, they claimed that, well, we have got to resist communism. And he resisted, and therefore he was put into prison. He was freed from the prison in 1956. But after the failure of the revolution, he got shelter with the American embassy, where he lived until 1971. And then he was let out to the West, where he died in 1975. Now, the reformed position was different. They said, well, now there is a new regime, and they gave a kind of theological justification, and they introduced the theology of repentance. Theology of repentance, because they said, well, that the churches in Hungary made a mistake because they always supported the political elite, even several of the church leaders, the Catholics as well as the Reformed church leaders, voted the laws in the parliament against the Jews. And therefore, they said, now this is the communism is a punishment of God on us, but we have to accept it. We have to accept it, and therefore they developed the theology, which is which was called the theology of contrition. It meant that, well, we do not criticize this state, but we consider it as God's solution, and therefore we have always been progressive, and the Reformed Church is a left-minded church, and it is always against political reactionaries. And so therefore, several Reformed leaders who got into position, and they, of course, managed to get rid of those bishops who were critical of communism. So already in the early 50s, late 1940s, there were several bishops in the Reformed Church who were openly supporting communism, because they said, well, this is God's sentence on us, and therefore we have to accept it, and we have to recognize that, well, this old feudalistic regime, which was a collaboration with Catholicism, is now over, and therefore the Reformed Church is progressive in itself, and therefore they were rather pro-communism. So when they made a compromise with the communist state quite early, so in 1948, when the Reformed were the ones to sign a compromise with the communist state. The situation in the Lutheran Church was different. The new bishop, who was elected to be bishop right after the Second World War in 1945, was Bishop Lajos Ordas. He was following a Lutheran theology, differentiating the two realms. And he said, well, we have to follow our conscience, and we are not meant to oppose the Catholics, oppose the communists as the Catholics do. Neither are we meant to support the communists as the Reform church leaders do, but we have to find out a way which is good for the church. Now, Bishop Ordas was soon elected to be the vice president, the first vice president of the Lutheran World Federation, where the Lutheran World Federation was founded in Lund in 1947. And then he traveled to Western Europe and also the United States, where he got support for the churches, rebuilding of the churches. And his position was, when he returned to Hungary, it was already the beginning of hard-line communism, so in 1948. And the great issue was the issue of the church-related schools, and the communist state wanted to nationalize the church-related schools, and the Catholics objected because they said, well, we do not agree with that. The Reformed were willing to offer their schools, but Bishop Ordas, as a Lutheran, said that, well, I believe that the churches, that the schools are also a part of the body of the church. So, he was not willing to offer these schools to the communist state, and therefore they created a show trial, he was sentenced to prison. He was almost executed, but eventually he was sentenced to prison, and he spent 2 years in prison from September 1948 until May 1950. So his position was a Lutheran position, that neither a direct opposition. He said, I'm not a politician. I'm responsible for my sheep, the church. I'm not going to fight as a politician. So the main difference between Cardinal Mincenti and Bishop Ordas was that Cardinal Mincenti was willing to fight. He became a political symbol of resistance. But Bishop Ordas was not, he did not consider himself as a political leader. He considered himself as a theologian. And he said, I'm responsible for defending my church, defending my people, perhaps the issue of church-related schools in normal times is an adiaphoron, but when the church is persecuted, it is not an adiaphoron. So he felt responsible personally for the defense of these churches. He was unwilling to sign this compromise with the state, and therefore the state removed him from the top of the church, and he was sentenced into prison. So that was his Lutheran position.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fabiani. You've mentioned how the Lutherans distinguished between the two kingdoms and took rather in-between line on their approach to communism, at least at the start. But in your book, The Veil of God, you describe sort of four different ways of reacting to the communists. And in many respects, it seems to me the Lutheran Church throughout the late 40s to 1990 took all of those approaches, at least at one time or another in its history. Can you explain about the confessors and the other ways that the church tried to deal with this government?
It was Bishop Ordas who was the confessor. He was the only confessor in the church among the church leaders. And it is interesting that, you know, he had to suffer. He was willing to suffer. And when he was freed from prison, he had to be in live in total isolation for 6 years until the 1956 revolution. And then, just before the revolution, in the summer of 1956, partly due to the support of the Lutheran World Federation, because they, and also the World Council of Churches, they had a meeting in Hungary in the summer of 1956. So the church, the state agreed that Bishop Ordas was to be rehabilitated, and he was rehabilitated before the outbreak of the revolution. So when the revolution broke out, he was again already the bishop. So his rehabilitation took place just a few days before the revolution broke out. And this revolution was very short, you know. It came to an end just at the beginning of November. On the 4th of November, the Russian tanks returned and they oppressed the revolution. However, the Lutheran Church could sort of flourish because now the state didn't have time to bother with the churches. So the Lutheran Church was under the leadership of Bishop Ordas for another 2 years. And it's very important that while communism was already introduced again after the failure of the 1956 revolution, now the Lutheran Church enjoyed relative freedom. And it prospered. It prospered because Bishop Ordas managed to put those people in leading positions that were living for the sake of the church. And it meant the press and various district leaders and so on. And he was even allowed to go to the Minneapolis assembly of the Lutheran World Federation in 1957, where he was again elected to be the vice president of the Lutheran World Federation. And I've just seen a film recently about this assembly. So there was a big ovation when Bishop Ordas was speaking. So everybody applauded him as a hero of the faith, as a martyr. Now, so he was a confessor and the Lutheran Church was very strong, but, you know, when he returned from Minneapolis, in the second half of the, 1957, he began to be gradually isolated again, the state wanted him to make a compromise there. And he knew that there were some issues in which he was willing to compromise, which he considered minor issues for the sake of the church. Yes, we live now in communism, and therefore I accept it as a situation, but I'm not willing to compromise in primary issues that concern the gospel, that concern the leadership. And the state wanted to place party members into the church leadership among the lay leaders. But Bishop Ordas resisted. He said, well, if these people, though they are perhaps born Lutherans, but if they are openly atheists, then I'm not accepting them as lay leaders of the church. So Ordas became again a stumbling block for the communist state, but it took several months until he was deposed again. He was removed from his seat as a bishop in June 1958, and then he lived for the rest of his life for another 20 years in total silence. It means that this model, the model of the compromise, of the model of the confessor, symbolized by Bishop Ordas, but the state said that, well, we are willing to collaborate with church leaders who are ready to make compromise Now, in my essay, I made a distinction between, the first one is the confessor, and only Bishop Ordas was a representative of this model. And there were the second model is the compromisers, and the compromisers were mainly people coming from the pietist movement, the evangelical side of the church, and they said that, well, the most important issue is the gospel, and if compromise is needed, we are willing to make compromise. For example, they were willing to offer the church-related schools to the communist state, and they were willing to sign the compromise with the communist state. But they were still, well, fine Christians, and the most important figure is Bishop Zoltán Turóczi, and also Bishop József Szabó, who represented this compromise. And the essence of this compromise was that, well, we are willing to agree with you on whatever you demand, but please let us preach the gospel. And of course, it was allowed, but they were somehow naive, you know. So they came from this pietistic background, and because of their naiveties, well, they were also removed by the communist state. So, by first they were removed in 1952, and Bishop Turóczi was elected again bishop in 1957, and within a year he was removed again. So this second model, the model of compromise, did not really work. Did not really work because the state wanted to find such persons that were willing not only to compromise but to collaborate with them. So this is what I call collaborators who were openly pro-communists, but in the second phase of communism, what I call the soft communism, in the so-called Kádár regime, there was a new type of collaboration, and this new type of collaboration was represented by Bishop Zoltán Kaldi. Now, this Zoltán Kaldi came from a pietistic background. He was a great evangelist. We may say that for a while he also belonged to the second group, to the compromisers. But now we have got state records, secret records concerning the activity of church leaders is now revealed. And we know that before he was elected to bishop in 1958, Zoltán Kaldi was already an agent of the communist regime. So he made not only a compromise with the state, but I would say he made a compromise with his soul. So the problem with this type of collaboration is that it was willing to give up the identity of the church, insofar as Bishop Kaldi even developed a special theology, what he called the theology of diaconia, and he imposed his own theology of diaconia upon his pastors. And the essence of the theology of diaconia was that church members are meant to serve with good conscience the communist state. Okay, so that was the essence of the theology of diaconia. The great model was Jesus, who was a great diakonos, but of course they failed to mention that Jesus was not only a diakonos, but he was a kurios, a lord. So this theology of diaconia was, I think, very dangerous. We still have the effects of the aftermath of this theology of diaconia, when it's not anymore an official theology, of course, but even after communism, we feel the distortion of healthy theological life in our church, because this theology was imposed upon the church for several decades.
And then your last group, you talk about those who do innovation, the innovators within the church.
Well, I call them cautious innovators. They try to introduce new ideas into the church, but they were not radical enough. I think that with the collapse of communism, a more radical solution was needed. And I also mention in my book, in the epilogue, the name of Bishop János Itzés, who was considered to be a kind of a member of the opposition, not during the Kaldi period of the, during the three decades of communist church leadership. In fact, when he finished his studies at the Lutheran Theological Seminary, Bishop Kaldi was unwilling to ordain him because he was meant to openly praise the communist state in his farewell speech when he said farewell to his professor at the end of the studies in the ceremony of the closing of the academic year. And therefore, Bishop Kaldi said, well, if you because you refuse, then I'm not going to ordain you as a minister. So he worked as a physical worker, and he had to go to the army, and it took several other years when the other bishop eventually ordained him. And so he was a member of the radical opposition during the Kaldi period, but also he was a representative of this radical opposition group who were formed in a group called Ordas Lajos Friendrich Circle. Now, it's very important that Ordas's name was taboo for three decades in the Lutheran Church. Nobody was allowed to utter his name, and the secret police reported those who visited his home and so on. So he died in 1978. But when Bishop Ordas's memoirs were published in the West just before the fall of communism, so in 1985 and 1987. Now, it became obvious for several church members, including myself, that now look, the Lutheran Church was suffering because its real bishop was removed, and his name became a taboo. And then all of a sudden, several of us recognized that we have got to somehow reclaim his spiritual and theological heritage. And now we formed a circle. This was called the Ordas Lajos Friendly Circle. It was formed in 1988, and several pastors belonged to our group. We even launched a periodical that was the first free independent periodical. It's still flourishing after almost three decades. The title is Christian Truth. And in this quarterly, we published the memoirs of Bishop Ordas and several articles relating to his activity. And Bishop Itzes, János Itzes, belonged to this group. So it's important that he was a representative of this group who wanted to have a radical renewal, not only a mishmash changes, and to the surprise of many people, Bishop Itzes was elected to be bishop in the new diocese, and it was due to his activity that the so-called fact-finding committee was set up in our church when it became obvious that several pastors were collaborating with the secret police. It was Bishop Itzes and some other leaders of the church who openly voted for the setting up of this fact-finding committee, which was quite unique among the churches of post-communist Hungary. So this fact-finding committee was set up in 2005, and they published volumes concerning those who were involved, and this is important for the purification of the church. We somehow believe that truth should be revealed and then reconciliation is possible.
Now, with regard to this fact-finding committee, then, do you think that it has healed some of those wounds?
Several members of the church, especially those who were involved to a certain extent, they are very unhappy with the work of this fact-finding committee, and they say that, well, they do not heal those wounds. But I think it's a painful process. It's a painful process, but one cannot avoid this painful process. We have got to face with our wounds, with our sins, with our own betrayals. It's not only an individual case. Some people say that, well, it's only it has got to do with the individual and God. But we say it's a communal thing. So whoever was willing to report on his fellow Christian to the state is also responsible for this community. So we definitely feel that it's a painful process, but it's a necessary process. And I'm sure that in the long run, it will be justified. But that is true that it must be done with much caution, care, and love. So truth and justice without love and concern is harsh and very dangerous indeed. But if we approach those whose names are now revealed and we support them as brethren who have fallen, and I think in that case their conscience can be freed, and if it's done in this atmosphere, then in the long run, I'm sure it will have its positive effects upon the life of the church.
The examination on the church under communist rule will be back next week. Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.